It's great to see Melanie. And I found it very interesting to watch that video because I noticed at least three times in that video she tried to deflect attention away from herself. She's like, oh, that look over there is my bed. There's the director. Here, take the camera lens and literally move it away from herself. So I apologize in advance for turning the camera on you three. I know it's not exactly what you would want to have. We will try to make it as painless
as
possible.
We're sitting here together. We're
united. We're sitting, we're united, we're united, yeah. And we'll bounce it around. Welcome, Kim Moody, Danny Cooper, and Nicholas Holmes, our other three accreditees for today, have decided that they would rather do this all together and work it over a bit, you know, between them, which I think is great. We'll mix it up a little bit. And we'll just sort of get started by talking about you all cut in different forms, but you've all been cutting for a long time. Have you ever felt like you were labeled with something and that's just what you had to keep doing? Or do you feel like it's sort of, this is what I'm drawn to in terms of like drama or documentary or television or any of those things?
Both.
I'm with Alex. I think you cut everything.
You can cut everything. Mm. But do people label you? Do they always say, "Oh, well, you know, Kim, he can do DACA. We'll give him the DACA." Or you, but you feel like you can do anything? Or
There was a point at which I think I decided I just wanted to do DACA.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's something you really love about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you love about it?
There's an autonomy.
Oh, yeah.
I think. With the story that I love, I suppose that's it. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're kind of a writer. You're.
I'd hate to say that. No, I don't think so. I don't think anyone would agree. I'd probably think like one.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. And.
Well, I had an interesting experience earlier in the year where I was chasing a long documentary series, and. I got an email from the producer who had initially been very enthusiastic saying, "Oh, we don't feel you've had the right experience."
Wow.
So I then took something else and they called me back.
Right.
They couldn't, because I guess they couldn't find anyone or something. But then they called me back and offered me the job, and I must say I was pleased to say I can't do it.
Right. So do you identify with any particular, I'm this kind of editor, or you feel you're quite
open? I've been doing drama ever, and IMAX documentary, so.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Unrelated.
Unrelated. Yeah. And do you feel like they use different parts of your brain, or they...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Which is the DACO part, or the IMAX part? Is that like a... Is that a thing
unto
itself?
It's just a very slow-motion documentary. Because, you have to read every shot.
Right.
So, I actually... The first time I cut one, I got hold of a film that I'd seen on the big screen and I loved, and put it into, it was back in those days, it was U-matic tape machines, and I measured the length of every shot in the film, and just came up with a theory of certain kinds of shots would be certain lengths.
Uh-huh.
How long were the shots?
7.5 seconds is a good,
Oh, that's interesting, an average.
Shot.
Yeah. And this was...
And for a big wide shot, 12 seconds.
Wow.
And, yeah, because has anyone seen Antarctica, the IMAX film?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Couple, yeah.
So there are shots in there where you're looking at a million emperor penguins.
Right.
Just and off into layers into the distance.
Right. And it just
sits on the screen because you need to be, the audience is going, ooh.
So that impact.
And if I hadn't seen that other film on the big screen, I would never have known, because at that time there were no IMAX theatres in Sydney.
Right.
So we had to fly to the Gold Coast to see anything.
To see one, yeah.
But I was fighting with the director constantly, who wanted to make all the shots shorter.
Right, he wanted to.
He was looking at it on that screen.
Because he's looking at it and he's feeling it that way, and he's not thinking. Is that a big transition for a director to imagine what it's going to be like in the big screen, or to feel
it? Well,
it
always will be
does?
With IMAX. Less so, because now everyone's got these big widescreen TVs, don't you think?
Right.
There's much less of
right.
a difference.
Yeah.
And I also think you learn how to pace for a big screen.
Mm.
I mean, big screen, small screen is so amorphous now.
Yeah, it's really fluid.
People
right.
watch your movies on their phones.
And has your cutting adapted to that? Do you think you've had to make any
difference? If I'm cutting a television drama, I'll cut it slightly faster, depending on the show, of course.
Yes, yeah.
Because your eye doesn't have to scan as much, depending on, you know, because your screen is it's never really big.
Right.
The problem is when you cut a TV drama and they project it on the big screen.
Right.
But it generally works, don't you find? I mean, when we
I used to have a theory when we were editing on screens that big. Editing television, cut every time you think you can. If you're cutting a film, cut every second time.
Nice.
So don't always jump in.
Because
in those days, there was a huge difference between a little screen like that and a big screen, but there isn't so much. You know.
Cool. You know, I'm going to move.
Yeah, it's
sorry.
Great, isn't it?
I'm gonna get myself out of this picture because I'm not interested in being in it. I'm going to see it. And then you're going to talk this way, right? You can move in a bit, and that's good. I like that picture. Okay. Reframe. Excellent. So this is really interesting. Nicholas, this is the second time you've mentioned sort of thinking about length and in terms of these numerical kinds of ideas.
Well, the last thing I said was not literal at all.
Oh,
right. The first thing was.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. Just do you feel like those kinds of numbers come into the conversation in your edits at all? Do you feel like people are, the pace of things is changing, you're cutting faster, you're cutting slower, or is it still just project to project, each one will have a different rhythm and a different ask?
I think it's project to project.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And I think it's dependent on, I mean, doing primarily drama. Sorry.
Stand up.
What I was saying is I think it's primarily based on project as to how you pace a show,
mm-hmm.
And the style of the script. And that, I'm talking about drama here, not documentary. I started off cutting documentary. I found that was very useful when I started cutting low-budget Australian drama, because quite often when you're cutting a documentary, you have to write. I know you say you're not a writer, but you're writing something, you're creating something, as we've heard from all these people today.
Mm-hmm.
If you're cutting a low-budget Australian drama that's not terribly well-written, you have to rewrite, and you have to think. So I found that very useful when I first started.
Yeah.
I used to cut drama a long time ago, and I remember someone saying to me, I was a kid, and said, whenever you put in a POV, it has to be, if you make it 1 second and 11 frames, it works.
What?
I went, what? And I did, and it did.
Can we write that down?
But it's true. It's the most bizarre thing.
Do you know why? I bet. Well, it's funny you should say that, because in Psycho, Hitchcock's film Psycho, I think it's the scene where Martin Balsam comes in and it must be late because he gets murdered on the set. I haven't seen it for years, but someone comes into the house where the old lady is and looks around the room, and there's cuts of all these weird things, and they're all 1 second and 11 frames.
That's where it came from.
There you go. But it works.
It worked.
We didn't think it. Can I ask you three, because, you know, the three of you have all worked really for a long time and had really fantastic, wonderful careers. And I'm interested to know, you know, that you're obviously all three really different people with different kinds of experience. Why do directors choose you? Like, what do you think is your offer as an editor? You know, are you going to be somebody who's easy to get along with, somebody who's going to have a sensibility that's the same as theirs, somebody who's just done stuff that they liked, you know? How have you evolved as an editor? What's your unique selling point, your unique quality, unique who you are?
Don't have a clue.
You have no idea.
That's a hard question for us to answer.
That's interesting.
And it's also different from film to film or project to project.
I mean, I don't know for those two, but that is because she's very pretty.
Sorry.
Have I told you I love you too?
We could have interrupted you, you know. But I find, I mean, in television, it's the producer often that hires you. So
the producer hires you, but you have your direct relationships with the producer at that point, or the director? Or?
Well, no, obviously mostly with the director, but as you might work with five or six different directors over a project.
Over a series.
Yeah. So I guess they think you're well-mannered and reliable.
Reliable.
And fun.
Fun. That's
well, I think it's important to create an atmosphere where people are relaxed and not feeling, you know, this is difficult, even if it is difficult.
Yes, it is, and it is difficult. I mean, there's a lot of time stress and a lot of problems and so forth going on, money.
Time.
Time is the big stress.
But if you form a relationship with somebody, a director primarily, or a producer, and you work well with them, they will come back to you, because why would they not?
Right.
Yeah.
Unless they're incredibly sort of fanciful and, you know. I have had directors say, I'd like to try someone new.
Right.
You know, I want to fuck around, you know.
Right.
Okay, but don't bring back any diseases.
That's okay, too.
Right. That's almost as bad as it's not you, it's me.
Yes. Oh, I love you, but you make me feel old.
Right.
Don't look at me.
So how personal is the job? It's not quite that personal. I mean, Andrew talked about making it fun, and Alexander talked about, you know, communication is a really important thing. The relationships that you form with these people, are they really, how personal are they? Do you feel like they're very intimate and secrets stay in the edit suite, or are they? Yes, yes, yes. Secrets stay in the edit suite. We're not even going to comment on that one.
I actually stayed the night at the house, not with, but at the home of a director and his wife, who I do a lot of work with, last night. And we were talking about why do you hire an editor? And he said, well, when it comes down to it, really, it's who do you want to be stuck in a dark room with for a long period of time. You have to get on with them. You have to feel like they're your friend. You have to feel like you're all working towards the same thing, that you're trying to make the same project. You have to, you get to the stage where you can finish someone's sentences. The last project I did, second film with a director, we started saying the same thing at the same time. Yeah. Exactly
nice.
The same. I'd say, what about? And he'd say, yes. And that was really amazing, because we had gotten to that through two films. You're asking everybody what makes you feel excited about when that happens, when the communication starts to happen, and it's really fantastic, and you're collaborating with somebody and you're making something.
Yes.
That is a lot of fun.
That is a lot
it's
of
really
fun.
Great.
Is that your experience, Kim?
Yeah.
But different directors are so
happening
completely
less
different.
And less, though.
Really?
Sorry? Last night was a good night?
It's happening less and less.
Oh.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it's a completely different experience with every different director. And
okay.
I just was working with Darren Ashton. I don't know if people know him. Made a lovely little film called Razzle Dazzle.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we just laughed for the whole time and had a great time. Let's do this again. Other people were, you know, worried and quiet.
Right.
So it's just varies hugely.
So that you have the teeth grinders and you have the effusive.
But you always try and make them feel it's all right. We're looking after you.
Right. So when you talk about change over, say, the 10 years since you've been in ASE, do you feel like it's difficult to say, oh, this has changed about films? Essentially, what I'm hearing is changes project to project. It's not necessarily because 10 years ago it was like this and now it's like
well,
that.
Well, I think what Alexander was saying about with digital technology, people are shooting a lot more.
Yes.
Because without mentioning any names, there was a very well-known director a couple of years ago. I was working on something. They did the slate, the whole business, and he or she walked into the frame, had a 60-second conversation with the actors.
Right.
And if they were shooting film, you'd never do that. But and people aren't aware that wastes massive amount of our time.
So it takes your time to get through it, your drive space.
Hopefully they'll. I mean, I think it's getting a bit better actually recently. A bit more disciplined since that was a few years ago. But much more footage every day.
Yeah. And how do you cope with this much more footage? I mean, what do you do to manage it? You just suck it up?
Yep.
Or you ask for more time.
You ask for more time.
Or you ask
and
for
is
more
that
time.
Successful?
Sometimes, yes. If you don't ask, you don't know. It's really quite good to ask, I think. Listen to your grandmother.
But, you know, with series like Wild Boys was being shot by Joe Pickering, and he would have, as you were saying, a 5D over here and a GoPro, and so every shot had four cameras rolling. And the editor told me that, you know, the producers, have you got a close-up here? And the director and the editor looked at each other and said, I don't know. Because you just don't have time. In that situation, you don't have time.
Assistants? Do you work with assistants?
I always work with
assistants. And what is the assistant doing in relation to this massive, this influx of footage? Are they part of the wrangling process?
Yes. The last job I did, the assistant was transcoding results, because our data wrangler wasn't terribly experienced.
Right.
But that's not normal.
Right.
Basically, my assistants sync up.
Syncing?
For the cutting room.
Right.
You don't necessarily need to sync for the crew anymore, because, you know, and then, you know, they work alongside of me doing all the things that assistants do,
such as
sound effects, labeling things, cutting if I need extra stuff cut, finding new music.
Will the assistant ever be able to answer that question, yes, there's a close-up, I can go find it? Or
If they're a good assistant, they will. I mean, you try and see every frame of the film.
Right.
I always, if it's a film, yes.
If it's a television show,
if it's a Wild Boys, it's a different way of working and a different mentality.
Well, luckily I didn't have to work on it. I don't think I've ever cut anything where I didn't look at every frame.
How about you, Kim? You can't possibly look at every frame.
No, I mean, I was just thinking of a scene sort of relatively recently, 24 cameras. Most of them GoPros. Which you can imagine. You know.
Did you have an assistant?
Oh yeah. But it was just so much stuff. You've got to be very decisive, I think, very quickly in that situation. But.